From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Mountain View.
San Rafael.
Lower Haight, San Francisco.
Brentwood.
Corte Madera.
Pleasant Hill.
Inner Richmond in San Francisco.
Montclair in Oakland.
Coming up on a special hour-long version of Cross Currents with the host of NPR's Bullseye, Jesse Thorne. It's the first day of our spring membership campaign, so we're celebrating with a show full of firsts. We have a story from the first episode of Cross Currents, reported by our first sound engineer.
With a brain vitamin, I'm Roman Mars for Cross Currents.
And we'll hear from the musicians of the nation's first openly gay marching band.
I don't mean it in a derogatory way, but straight parades, they're different than pride. Pride is when you really step out.
We're celebrating firsts today with special guest Jesse Thorne on Cross Currents. Stay with us. I'm joined today by Jesse Thorne, host of Bullseye, the NPR show about what's good in popular culture. We're in our spring membership campaign here at KALW, and we're inviting listeners to give us a call at 800-525-9917, or you can go to KALW.org right now and become a member. Do it now, get it out of the way, and then you can just sit back and enjoy this show. Again, it's the first day of our campaign. Welcome, welcome. So we're going to be talking about firsts today on the show. Let's start with you, Jesse. If you can kind of go back down memory lane with us and tell us, when was the first time you knew that you wanted a career in radio?
Wow. It's funny. In some ways, I've fallen into a career in radio, but I'll tell you the first time I really found myself valuing radio. I'm from San Francisco, and I grew up listening. I was a huge baseball fan, like a completely obsessive baseball fan, well into my teenage years, and I grew up listening to Hank Greenwald call Giants games on KNBR.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that I think I was self-aware enough by the time I was 10. You know, I played baseball, but I was self-aware enough to know that I was not going to cut it as a baseball player. And so my big backup plans were maybe I could become an umpire or maybe I could become a sports broadcaster. And it was absolutely like Hank Greenwald was my absolute broadcasting hero as a kid.
Mm.
And his son actually calls Giants games in spring training now and sounds a ton like him. And just listening to him on my, you know, I have a smartphone app that plays baseball games. And listening to him call spring training games is like the most vivid recollection of my childhood. You know, it feels like it's 1989 and Kevin Mitchell and Will Clark are leading the Giants to the National League Championship.
Mm-hmm.
So that was, I think that was a moment when radio really became important to me. And I think in addition to that, as a teenager, I remember listening to the first few years of This American Life. And also a guy who'll make an appearance on this show, Roman Mars, hosting a show called Invisible Ink on KALW. I don't think I ever aspired to make that kind of radio. But it was the time when I thought to myself that maybe there was a place in public radio for someone like me, that they felt like something that, you know, if it wasn't the kind of thing I wanted to make, it was at least something that was that felt relevant to me or connected to me.
And you didn't end up being a sportscaster either?
No, although I'm willing to accept job offers.
All right, Jesse, do you remember the first interview you did since we're talking about firsts?
Wow. Well, I started doing my show Bullseye, which used to be called The Sound of Young America, when I was 19 years old.
That's right.
And in college at UC Santa Cruz. And we started doing interviews mostly because we figured out very quickly that it was a great way to fill time. We signed up for this hour-long show with this idea that we were going to like produce pieces and write comedy for it. And we were like going to college and had jobs, and we were like, oh, this is not a good plan. And so when we first started doing interviews, we were like, wow, that took half an hour. That's half our show. And I think I remember One of the first ones I remember is Dick Dale, the king of the surf guitar. We looked him up. We looked him up on his website, and my then co-host Jordan, who now does a comedy show with me called Jordan Jesse Go, Jordan called the phone number on his website, and it was just his trailer in the desert. Like Dick Dale just answered the phone. Hello, Dick Dale, king of the surf guitar. And Jordan booked him on the show, and he was really lovely. He was a combination of really lovely and also had this amazing and deep-seated belief that he had invented every genre of music, which is like not entirely untrue. He was certainly an innovative musician, but was kind of amazing just to like hear Dick Dale like list the subgenres of rock and roll that he invented by playing his instrumental surf rock.
That's an awesome first interview, I must say. That is Jesse Thorne. He is with me today on Cross Currents, joining us during the spring membership campaign. We are taking your calls right now. Give us a call and make your contribution at 800-525-9917. Our phone volunteers are waiting for you, or better yet, go online. Go to kalw.org and make your contribution there. Become a member. Support the station that brings you Bullseye, that brings you Jesse Thorne. Bullseye, the show that keeps you in the know about the best artists, best comedians, Sundays at 4, right here on this station. We would love your support today. Give us a call at 800-525-9917. Jesse Thorne, why should people support public radio and KLW and call in and give money? What is that about?
I think KLW listeners know why they're listening. I mean, I know that I listened to KLW when I lived in the Bay Area and was proud to do so. And I think that, you know, KLW offers the special qualities of public radio, and I don't think I need to explain those, but KALW is also a genuinely Bay Area effort. You know, KALW is a real community station made substantially by people who are unpaid and underpaid, who want to make something that reflects a really special place in the world. And I think that's why KLW listeners listen to it. They know that this is something that is handcrafted, for lack of a less cliched way of describing it, for people in the Bay, you know. And I think that's something that's really important and something that you can only get from a local radio station like KLW.
And we're celebrating our birthday this year, our 75th birthday. So why don't you join in the festivities? Give us a call. Make your contribution in this spring membership campaign. Again, before we go to our first story, the number is 800-525-9917 or online at kalw.org. And now let's go to our first story of the show. It comes from 99% Invisible's own Roman Mars. Roman, for those of you who don't know, started his career right here at this station over a decade ago. He was creating a show called Invisible Inc. We just heard about that from Jesse Thorne. Kind of an audio zine featuring stories and commentaries from local press, independent, underground press. Then he went to work at public radio in Chicago. Then he came back to KLW to become our first sound engineer for Cross Currents back when we debuted the show in August 2008. In fact, he had a story in that very first show, and we're going to play it for you right now. By the way, you can tell Roman was already into design back then, because in this piece, he talks with Ian Wright, one of the original founders of Tesla. Wright is now the CEO and founder of Wright Speed, a clean energy transportation company in San Jose. Roman had one question. Are plug-in electric cars actually more efficient and cleaner than traditional gas cars?
I've always had this nagging skepticism about electric cars. Here's why. You can burn a fossil fuel in the standard internal combustion engine that lives under the hood of your automobile, or you can have an electric battery-powered car, not burn any gas in the engine itself, but rest assured, some fossil fuel was burned in a power plant somewhere to make that car go. Six of one, half dozen of another. And as it turns out, my skepticism is not unique.
without doing the numbers, my engineering intuition was that there wasn't any gain to be had by going to an electric car because power station's not going to be any more efficient and you're going to have the losses in the grid.
That's Ian Wright, the founder and CEO of Wright Speed. He obviously has come around on the benefits of electric cars because now he makes high-performance electric car engines. And the prototype he built to show off his powertrain technology is a pretty sweet Formula One-style racer called the X1 that goes from 0 to 60 in about 3 seconds. The back license plate reads 170 mpge.
And if you burn a gallon of gasoline in a gas engine car, most of that is going to be thrown away as heat in the radiator, in the exhaust system, radiation from the engine and so on. And a little bit of it will be used to drive the car along the road, so it's actually quite wasteful. But all of that energy will be gone.
But you, the astute brain vitamineteer, may be saying to yourself, wait, that energy you got from the wall plug is already high-quality stuff. The losses and inefficiencies are upstream of that, at the power station and on the electric grid.
Power stations can be made much more efficient than car engines for several reasons. Reason one is that you can operate them at, you know, their most efficient thermodynamic point most of the time, and you generally can't do that in cars. And the second thing is that you can do waste heat recovery. So, you know, the most efficient modern fuel-burning power station would be the GE H-series gas turbine, and that's a 60% efficient machine. And there would be a lot of energy wasted in the hot exhaust gas from the turbine, but they boil water with that, make steam, drive a steam turbine, so that the waste heat is recovered into electricity. So overall, it's 60% efficient. So those two reasons mean that if you are going to burn oil to make electricity, you can do it much more efficiently. And then, yeah, there are losses in the grid, but on average, it's about 95% efficient. So the losses in the grid are not actually that big a deal. So that's why it's still better to run your car on electricity.
There are other benefits as well. As Wright said, currently the U.S. uses coal about 50% of the time to make electricity, with all the emissions and nastiness that goes along with it. But if you're using it to power a fleet of electric cars, take one poor-performing coal plant offline and replace it with a more efficient, lower-emission plant, the entire fleet of cars effectively gets an upgrade. So I'm no longer as skeptical, but this world of electric cars is not likely to happen anytime soon, or probably ever. High battery costs and range limitations make pure battery electric cars not quite feasible, so Ian Wright is planning on a plug-in hybrid future. Plug-in hybrids hook up to the electric grid to fully charge and are designed to have the benefits of the pure electric car for the first 50 miles or so, which accounts for the vast majority of driving. And then a gas-powered engine kicks in to recharge if you need to leave at a moment's notice and drive to Mexico in the middle of the night. It happens. With a brain vitamin, I'm Roman Mars for Cross Currents.
That was Roman Mars in 2008 with the first piece he reported for Cross Currents back when he worked here. It's an interesting time capsule. Pure battery electric cars are not a pipe dream. They're now really heating up. Just over a month ago, Tesla announced their new $35,000 Model 3 electric car. They already have 400,000 pre-orders, and the car isn't even being released until next year. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hanat Baba, and I'm joined by Jesse Thorne, host of Bullseye. Jesse, it might be hard to recognize Roman's voice in that piece because it was so long. Do you find that your voice has changed over time?
Gosh, you know, like I'm sure you know this, although you're broadcasting live, but one of the weirdest parts about being a radio host is listening to your voice back afterwards. As weird as that is for, you know, a guest or whatever, it never stops being weird as a radio host. Like when I listen to my voice, when I listen to playback of my voice, I swear it sounds like another human being who is definitely not me. If it weren't for the fact that my brain was remembering jokes that I said before, I would not believe that it was me and not an imposter.
Well, when you first started out, the show was called The Sound of Young America, started at KZSC, USC Santa Cruz. Shout out Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
Well, actually, we dug up an episode from those college years. Should we listen to it? Should we not?
I'd rather not, but I have a feeling that you're going to play it either way.
I think we should. So here's a clip. This is Jesse Thorne about 15 years ago. This episode aired in March 2001.
The Sound of Young America! and The Sound of Young America. I'm your host, Jesse Thorne. With me, as always, are...
Jordan Morris.
And...
Big Time O'Neill.
Big Time O'Neill. Today's program is themed official things. Basically, what we're going to be doing through the course of the entire program is naming official such things of The Sound of Young America. You can listen to our show every Thursday morning from 7:30 to 8:30 here on KZSE 88.1 in Santa Cruz. And you can not listen to it anywhere else. So if you're listening to it right now, this is a KZSC exclusive. Anyway, now I guess we ought to get started. Do you guys have any ideas?
Yeah, I think the official disease of Sound of Young America should be the gout.
The gout? Are there any reasons behind that?
Yes, because well, one of the major influences of our show, Benjamin Franklin, suffered from it. So, to honor Benjamin Franklin.
To honor Benjamin Franklin, the gout?
Yeah.
What about,
Okay, I think the official bizarre condiment of The Sound of Young America should be French fries dipped in a milkshake.
French fries dipped in a
milkshake?
It's
delicious.
That is bizarre.
Everybody's done it at some point.
That's not a condiment.
Never tried it before.
It's the official bizarre condiment of The Sound of Young America.
What, French fries dipped in a milkshake? What do you put that on?
French fries.
That was Jesse Thorne and friends in a clip from 15 years ago, back when he hosted The Sound of Young America on KZSC at UC Santa Cruz. Brings back some memories, Jesse?
Well, we had literally no models. There was no talk radio department at the station. There was essentially no news program at the station. There was no journalism going on at the station to speak of. And so we were really just making it up as we went along. So we did everything from, you know, in-depth interviews with artists to, I remember at one point we had Mike Nelson, the incredibly gracious longtime host of Mystery Science Theater 3000, and we made him act along to this record that was like dialogue with silences in it so that you could do the other side. But he told us right before we did it that he had not gotten the facts that we had sent him of the script. Like, this was like a record from the 60s that you could act along with teen stars of the day. And so he had not gotten this facts of the script, so he did not have the script. And we just made him, like, make up the other side of the dialogue on this dialogue with this thing. I also remember, like, one of my co-hosts, Gene, ended up with a very serious girlfriend that he probably dated for a year, who he met because we had this pair of tickets that we couldn't give away, and so we turned it into a win a date with Gene contest. And she called in and won. I remember we had a recurring bit on the show. I swear, this was a recurring bit where we would play a Whale Songs record and converse with it. And I don't even remember what the premise of that bit was. We just found this. We had a bit called How to Use a CB Radio that we recorded a theme song for that I still remember went, How to Use a CB Radio, How to Use a CB Radio, How to Use a CB Radio in your truck or car. That was just, when we needed to fill time, we would play that theme song. And then we would just play tracks from this record from the 70s that taught you how to use a CB radio.
That's
awesome. We did a lot of weird stuff.
Well, you started releasing the show as a podcast before Serial, 10 years before Serial, let's just put it that way, way back, 2004. Why did you start making podcast? Did you see this as kind of the future of where audio is going even back then?
I wish that I could claim some kind of grand vision, but really it was about a pretty simple math equation. A friend of my family named Cliff Garish, who was a kind of guy who like read Wired magazine when it was cool, and or at least geek cool. And he said to me, there's this thing called podcasting. You should try it. I know you're making your show. You're probably recording it. And I said, yeah. And he said, well, you should try podcasting it. This was before there was even podcasting support in iTunes. This was in 2004. Mm-hmm. And I tried it. I basically, the equation was it would probably take me about 2 extra hours to make a podcast of the radio show that I was doing. And if I could get like 200 people to listen, I figured, would I spend 2 hours of my time to like play it on a boombox for a theater full of 200 people? Yes, of course I would. Mm-hmm. And so I just did it with the idea that maybe some people would listen. And right from the beginning, the situation was some people listened, not thousands to begin with, but hundreds. And I thought, man, this is amazing. Hundreds of people are pulling my show off of the information superhighway. And that's what we called it then. And it was awesome. And mm-hmm. I've basically been doing it ever since. I mean, the reason that I sort of doubled down on it was not all public radio stations are as cool as KALW. It took a long time for me to get established in public radio, even to the limited extent that I am now. So podcasting was sort of a lifeline for me. You know, it was an audience that really cared, and also an audience that was supporting my show when I, you know, at the time I still had a full-time job, so, and mm-hmm. was making my show completely by myself in my house. So, you know, it was tough times, and the podcasting audience was really there for me.
All right. Well, since you did mention KLW there as being a cool place, we're gonna piggyback on that and ask the listeners to become members today. This is our spring membership campaign. We are taking your calls. Make a pledge. Make a contribution today to the station at 800-525-9917 or go to kalw.org and make that contribution. Pick out a gift. We don't like to talk a whole lot about these gifts. We have shirts, we have mugs, we have all that good stuff, but we really here at Cross Currents like to, you know, just go to the story and go to our awesome guests. But today we have a new gift, and we have to tell you about it, because speaking of firsts, for the first time, we're offering this thumb drive that comes packed with all the stories that Cross Currents has done about Golden Gate Park. We have done many stories over the years featuring this icon of San Francisco and the Bay Area, and we've put all of those stories on a little thumb drive, flash drive, whatever you call it, the little USB drive. So you can get that if you give us a call right now at 800-525-9917. Give us a call or go online at kalw.org. Find out how you can get your hands on that. It is brand spanking new. This is the first time we're offering it. And really, this is the only place you can find it, right? Because it's our stories. We made it. We put it on a thing, and we're sending it to you. It's nowhere else. It's not online. It's not on the information superhighway, as Mr. Jesse Thorne just called it, or the webternet. You got to call 800-525-9917 right now and get a hold of it. Okay, we have another one. Another firsts gift, which is a mug. And what it says is San Francisco's first FM. How cool is that? That is a way to support this station. And, you know, you will be reminded, your friends will be reminded about why you support this station. So give us a call, 800-525-9917. And before we go to our next story, Jesse, you know, when we talk about these gifts do you think people call for the gifts, or do they call, you know, just because they want to support a station in your mind?
Well, I think that public radio, you know, uses the word member very advisedly. I think public radio is about not just representing a community, but being a community. Especially a station like KALW is really supported by a community of people who have come together to fund this essential service for a place. And I know, because I've been to KALW, that this is a no-frills operation where everyone is busting their rear to make it happen. Uh-huh. I'll tell you, when someone at KALW has to go to the bathroom, they go into a high school, a local public high school where KALW is based. I'm sorry. I'm going to tell the truth here. I'm a truth teller.
Okay.
I have a reputation as a truth teller.
It is what it is, Jesse.
They go into a local public high school, and I went to public high school in San Francisco. I have nothing bad to say about the public education system of San Francisco. I have some bad things, but nothing I'm going to say now. But they go into a local public high school. They're not even allowed to use the teacher bathroom. Mm. They have to go to the bathroom next to local teens. Mm. That's how serious these people are about bringing the Bay Area to you. So if you think that these people deserve your support to do the incredible work that they do, give a call and you'll get a cool thumb drive about Golden Gate Park.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We will take that endorsement. We will take all of that. Give us a call, 800-525-9917 or kalw.org. Jesse Thorne is staying with me throughout the show. But for now, let's go to our next story. We've heard a couple of radio firsts, and now we're going to hear about a first for the Lutheran Church. There's a San Francisco pastor and congregation who found an unlikely but perfect match. KALW's Jen Chien has that story.
Grace Evangelical Lutheran Church sits on a quiet residential corner in the Outer Sunset District of San Francisco. Upstairs in a meeting room, a small group is gathered around rectangular folding tables to sing grace before they eat. As the group eats dinner, Pastor Megan Rohrer plays a contemporary pop song as a launch pad for discussion.
What I like to do is I like to bring you a gospel according to pop, something that you might hear on the radio. Happiness hit her
like a train on a track. Some heads nod to the beat, but it's clear that this kind of music isn't the normal fare for this group. The room is filled with graying heads. Then there's the 30-something pastor, who stands out for another reason, too.
You can kind of tell from 20 feet away that I'm genderqueer, trans, or a big diesel dyke, which isn't how I identify, but it's how I look from the outside.
Rohrer was called to lead Grace Lutheran in 2014, becoming the first openly transgender head or solo pastor of a Lutheran church. But Rohrer's path to ministry was not an easy one.
I grew up in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, which is the Midwest and the cultural heartland of Lutherans. The motto is like, be in the paper when you're born and when you die, and don't get credit for anything in between because your job is to just like fit in.
But they actually found it hard to fit in South Dakota. A word about pronouns here. Rohrer prefers the gender-neutral pronoun they. At this point in their life, they say they feel comfortable with both male and female aspects of their identity, and English doesn't have a pronoun that captures that.
It's kind of a fascinating place to exist in the world, is that people can't really pin you down.
Rohrer grew up religious. They say that as a child, people recognize their gift for helping others. So ministry seemed like a good calling.
I've just always been the kind of person where If your life is going to fall apart, it's going to fall apart when you're standing next to me so that I can help you, like, put it back together.
After college, Rohrer came to identify as transgender and eventually found their way to a progressive Lutheran seminary in Berkeley. They were ordained in 2006, working extensively with homeless people and associate pastoring at several churches in San Francisco before being called to lead Grace Lutheran Church.
So we invite that Holy Spirit to prompt our lives to move in the direction of God, to sew up the holes and wounds in our hearts that we may love.
She is so alive, so with today and also with the past, with the Bible.
Sally Ann Ryan is president of the Church Council at Grace. After going years without a permanent pastor, Grace's aging congregation was dwindling. And Ryan says the church needed to look to the future.
She preaches everything from the Bible and that, but it's in today's language.
You may have noticed that Ryan is using the pronoun she to talk about Rohrer. Most people that I spoke to at Grace refer to their pastor as she. Though Rohrer prefers to use the pronoun they when possible, it's not really an issue at church.
I really am much more interested in being someone's pastor at the end of the conversation than having them get my gender right.
Please pray with me. Loving God, we know what it is like to be celebrated and to be looked down on. Help us to remember that you love us.
But Rohrer says being a publicly known church leader from a marginalized group comes with its own pressures.
Most people don't know other trans pastors. When you're of a very small group, there's this sense that if you screw up, it means everybody who's like you is not okay. Or if you screw up, they're going to pass rules saying transgender people can't be pastors because that person screwed up. And so there's something really beautiful about people accepting you for the fullness of who you are, so that you don't have to be a superhero all the time. You can be Clark
You're
Kent.
You're not the trans pastor.
Yeah.
You're their pastor.
Yeah, yeah. I get to be just a normal person who screws up the bulletin every once in a while, you know?
Back in 2014, shortly after becoming the pastor at Grace, Rohrer underwent a trans-related surgery.
I let them know that I would be having surgery, but it's pretty obvious. I went from like a triple D to an A, essentially.
Rohrer says the congregation's support during the healing process was both touching and surprising.
A 98-year-old woman in the congregation said, "Now that you've had this surgery, what are your pronoun choices? And like, are you going to be changing your name?"
Rohrer's convinced that they've found the perfect pastoral fit at Grace Lutheran.
People who truly embody the word grace. Like, never in a million years, did I think that I would be a part of a church that could welcome me and allow me to be a pastor, fully identifying as how I am.
So Pastor Megan Rohrer has found a spiritual home, and the Grace congregation has found just the right shepherd to lead them on their journey. You might say it's a match made in heaven. In San Francisco, I'm Jen Cheehan for Cross Currents.
Right. That was Jen Cheehan. Thank you, Jen. Jen is also our managing editor here at Cross Currents, and she manages another thing, an arts program. If you haven't heard, Sights and Sounds right here on KALW. I'm Hannah Baba. This is Cross Currents, and I'm joined by Bullseye host Jesse Thorne. Jen Cheehan, our reporter there and managing editor, went to high school here in San Francisco at San Francisco's School of the Arts. And you went there too, right?
Yeah, I sure did. Class of 1999. So did my wife. We met in high school. We went to the prom together.
Oh. So did growing up in a creative city like San Francisco, going to school in a creative school like you did, in this open-minded area, how did that shape you as a radio host, do you think?
Wow, that's an interesting question. I was actually thinking, listening to that piece, about what it was like to grow up. I grew up in the Mission. I was born in 1981, so in the 1980s and 1990s. You know, it was a really special and magical place to be. I guess it's all just one big house for Mark Zuckerberg now. But at the time, I mean, I was thinking actually of my neighbor Denise was the first openly trans person to run for citywide office in America. She ran for the Board of Supervisors in, I guess it must have been the early 1990s. And I was thinking about the churches that I grew up going to, St. John's and the Mission and Holy Innocents in Noe Valley, where we had a gay priest, and the absolutely wild, still pretty wild St. Gregory of Nyssa in Potrero Hill, where I worked for a while. And, you know, all of those, it was a radically open and creative place. And I don't think I would be any, you know, I just grew up with the expectation that I would be sensitive to the world around me and kind and excited about creativity. You know, that was just part of what it was to be in that place at that time. And I think that's been, you know, watchwords for my life. And I think also, it seems cliche now, but I think the idea of embracing difference, embracing the, you know, the gift of different perspectives, is something that I grew up with in the Bay Area, and also something that you see on a station like KALW that I think really means a lot.
And that creativity and that curiosity, your curiosity for, you know, learning about artists and learning about creative people, you know, thousands and thousands of people around the world listen to you, you know, craving that, right? Craving like these interviews that you do about art, about creativity. Again, this is our membership campaign, our spring membership campaign here at KELW. With me is Jesse Thorne, host of Bullseye. You're listening to Cross Currents, and we are asking for your support. We are celebrating our 75th anniversary here at KELW. We'd love for you to be a part of our station. We are excited about this station. I've been here for going on 11 years now. You know, when this news department first started, I was excited on day one, and I am excited today. And I hope that you will join us in our excitement about the station and celebrating our past 75 years and hoping to go on for the next 75 years. How can that happen? With your support, of course. Give us a call right now at 800-525-9917. Again, that's 800-525-9917. Make a contribution. If you're not a member of KALW, this is a perfect time to really join the family. And that's really what we feel we are here at KALW, just like this family and this scrappy place, as Jesse has kind of outed us as this place that, you know, it's kind of scrappy and we love it like it is. And yes, we go out to the bathrooms in the hall, you know, and yes, our carpets are not as clean as they should be because we're all about the production, really. We want to get on the microphone, talk to you. We want to get out in the Bay Area and bring you voices from East Oakland, from Fruitvale, from Bayview Hunters Point, from the Mission, from West Oakland, which is in the midst of great change. That's what we want to do with the support that you give. That's where it goes, not, you know, not in new carpets or new anything, really, that we wouldn't have it any other way. So give us a call and make that support at 800-525-9917. You can also go online, klw.org. Pick out one of the great gifts we have. We are celebrating firsts on today's show. And so you want to get your hands on a gift that we're presenting for the first time today. It is our Golden Gate Park story flash drive, a thumb drive with all the stories that Cross Currents has done over the years about Golden Gate Park. You are going to love this. It's beautiful and you can't find it anywhere else. You just stick it in and listen to these stories and remember, you know, your maybe a childhood time when you were at the park. Maybe your first kiss was at the park. Ooh, my engineers are looking at me. You know, everybody has a memory at Golden Gate Park. This is a thing that you just have to have. 800-525-9917. Jesse Thorne,
yes,
do you have a memory
at Golden
Gate Park?
I have made out at Golden Gate Park. Is that the question? I admit it. I have rented a paddle boat on Stowe Lake for the purposes of smooching. You got me. You've broken me down.
There you go. Just for that admission, you need to call 800-525-9917. You heard it here first, folks. Give us a call. Become a member. Renew your membership if you're already a member. We love hearing from you. Also, so when you call 800-525-9917, tell the phone volunteer why you listen to KALW. I always love reading those comments. Tell us what you listen to, what you like, and honestly, what you think can be done better. We love those as well. All right, with me is Jesse Thorne. I'm Hannah Baba. This is Cross Currents. Enough with the talking, Hannah. Let's go to our next story. Well, San Francisco wasn't the first city to celebrate LGBTQ Pride every June, but its Pride Parade is well renowned. One of the annual delights of that parade is the San Francisco Lesbian Gay Freedom Band. The band started its life as the San Francisco Gay Freedom Day Marching Band and Twirling Corps. That was in 1978, back when Gay Freedom Day was the name of the celebration. That year was historic. It marked the defeat of the Briggs Initiative, which would have banned gays and lesbians from working in public schools. Also, the short but revolutionary term of Harvey Milk as the first openly gay elected official in the country. Milk, of course, was tragically killed in November of that year. But in June, he rode in the parade and gave his iconic Hope speech. The San Francisco Lesbian Gay Freedom Band has since become one of the city's most beloved musical, social, and political institutions. They're actually the official band of the city of San Francisco. We spoke to a few current members about what the band means to them.
All right, let's just do one scale, and then we are really going to move through a lot of music tonight.
I'm Pete Nowlin, and I'm in my third season as the artistic director of the San Francisco Lesbian Gay Freedom Band. We will be celebrating our 40th anniversary in 2 years, and it was the first lesbian gay ensemble in the world, founded by John Sims, who looked at the situation of the developing gay rights movement and felt that the arts could be a vital component of that movement. So in 1978, he founded the Lesbian Gay Freedom Band, and shortly thereafter, the Gay Men's Chorus. And then you can see similar organizations sprouting all over the country.
John Sims, there is footage you can find if you look for it of a reporter running up to him in the parade, because he did lead the band in the parade. And said, "Excuse me, so what is your message?" And he kind of looked at her like, "What?" And just said, "Music. Our message is music." And then he just turned around and pranced off. My name is Billy Green. I play trombone in the band. I started with the band in 1991, in October of 1991. I moved here from North Carolina, and I stumbled across the band at the Folsom Street Fair, where they're always willing to take new members. And I haven't played my trombone for 10 years, and they said, like we always do, "That's fine, just come and try anyway."
My name is Sally Kanhuda, and I play in the percussion section. To me, it amazes me that I'm going to be 65 this year and that I'm still in a marching band. You know, that's pretty cool. Oh, my wife and I are both in the band. When we did get married, domestic partners, then that's when I really introduced her to the band, and I told her, I says, "If you want to marry me, you're going to marry a band with it." You know, I've been in the band since 91, and I brought her in 93. And we did the Dreams concert. She was stage crew. And that's when she got the bug back in, and she confessed to me later that she really is a band geek and that she did do woodwinds in grammar school and high school. So we went right down to Bronstein's and bought her first bass clarinet. It's just amazing when you go out onto the street, and usually it's Pride It's the pride parades that make it the big worthwhile the whole year round. Other parades are kind of different. I mean, I don't mean it in a derogatory way, but straight parades are, you know, with city parades, and they're different than pride. Pride is when you really step out and you know, those people are all with you and they understand where you're coming from and the work that you've done and to get to where you're at. And especially being older, the younger kids don't really realize how hard it was, you know.
The band got invited to play in the parade in Fresno. We went down this long, straight road, and it was just desolate. And there was, you know, we'd pass a house, and there'd be two people standing on the front porch looking at us and waving or hiding behind their curtains because the homosexuals are out there. And then when we got to the end, and that's where everybody was. And even more to the point, that's where the people in the parade in front of us were now, because they were done. They came back to watch the rest of the parade. And our drum major at the time, Frank Jones, got us to the intersection. And it was just on our side of the intersection, zero. On the other side of the intersection, hundreds of people standing there waiting for us. And he stopped us in the intersection. He had us play Basin Street Blues, which the arrangement we do starts out slowly and then speeds up, and when it speeds up, then we start marching. So we did this whole intro of like 16 or 32 bars, and then the tempo picked up and we stepped off, and I am not exaggerating at all when I tell you that when I stepped across that line on the other side of the intersection where the people were, they were screaming so loud I could not hear the music coming out of my own horn 3 inches away from my left ear. And it was so overwhelming, I very nearly burst into tears. It's hard to put in words what that means. I mean, it's acceptance, it's glad you're here.
I hate the word tolerant. I don't want to be tolerated. I want to be appreciated. I want to be celebrated. I want to just be. The network of people is just so incredible, and you feel that every moment. It's such a welcoming organization. We've grown a lot in the last 2 years. We have a lot of young people. So now we have also this new energy coming into the group that's really exciting. And music is such a great way to merge and bridge the differences that come with age and other differences, that we end up with just such a tightly knit, wonderful group of people who really know each other. Often when you lead a group, they come and play and they go home, and maybe they know the four people they sit next to. And that is definitely not the case with this organization. It's a group of friends.
That piece was produced by KALW's Jen Chien. You can see, hear, and make music with the San Francisco Lesbian Gay Freedom Band at their sing-along concert fundraiser called Spotlight on Broadway, featuring Donna Sachet and Leanne Borghese. That's this Saturday at the Sir Francis Drake Hotel. And you're listening to a special, very special edition of Cross Currents today. I'm Hannah Baba, here with interviewer extraordinaire, radio superstar, radio super sweetheart, Jesse Thorne of Bullseye. Yes, he's with us today. Hi, Jesse.
Hi. I can only presume that all of those appellations were ironic.
Actually, no, they were very literal. Very literal. We're in our KALW's spring membership campaign, and we're taking your calls. Become a member of KALW today, the station that brings you stories like the one you just heard, voices like the ones you just heard. Where can you really hear that here in the Bay Area, in that depth, and really for that long?
But KALW, we take the time to, you know, we let our stories breathe, as we like to say, and the station really gives us license for that and room for that, because that's what we believe in. We really want to hear the voices complete. We don't want to cut people off and get a little short sound bite of, you know, a minute or 2 minutes like other media might have to do, because that's how they're structured. How we're structured is that we accept donations from you. That's it. No corporation. No, we don't have the quote unquote underwriting. None of that. So who do we answer to? It's really you. And you've said that you want to hear more voices for longer. So you will hear a feature that's 9 minutes, 6 minutes, kind of unheard of in many, many, many other stations, but you can hear it here. That's why I'm here. And that's why you're listening as well. So why don't you give us a call, 800-525-9917, and contribute to the spring membership campaign. You can also make your donation at kalw.org. And speaking of that, Jesse Thorne, this idea of the soundbite versus the long form, you know, really kind of deep interview that does take time but gives you more perspective. Can you speak a little bit about that, of, you know, about interview versus little short snippets and clips?
You know, sometimes we hear at Bullseye, oh, people only want to listen to something for 3 or 4 minutes. And, you know, what we do on our show is have a real conversation with someone. You know, I'm going to talk to Whit Stillman, the filmmaker, later today. And he and I are just going to sit in this weird box that I'm sitting in. And my operation is no more polished than KALW in terms of its architecture. And he and I are just going to talk about why he does what he does and where his creativity comes from. And that's what I do with my guests. You know, we talk about why they make something, why they, you know, risk everything to make something. And that's something that I think deserves the dignity of a little bit of time. And I'm proud that we do it that way. You know, I'm proud KALW does it that way. I think there's something to be gained from something that's 3 minutes long and fun and action-packed. I'm not against it on principle. Mm-hmm. But I also think that there's something to be gained from letting something breathe and be real and deep. There, you know, I think my real, it may seem like an odd choice, but my real public media hero is Mr. Rogers. And you know, Mr. Rogers, and I've watched a lot of Mr. Rogers recently because I have 2 kids under 5. And Mr. Rogers was very profoundly committed to the idea of something that is quiet and deep, you know, something that doesn't demand your attention by saying, hey, pay attention to me, but welcomes your attention and gives you something that is much more profound. And sometimes that takes a little bit of time.
Right.
But if it's real, you know, if it's got the heart in it, then it really means something.
And that's how we feel as well here at KALW on Cross Currents. We, you know, these decisions go back and forth. Do we want the shorter? Do we want the longer? Do we want the deeper? And that's what we've decided. Thank goodness our audience agrees. If you're out there and you appreciate what you hear on Cross Currents, there is no way for us to know unless you get in touch with us. And we really love hearing from you. And like I said, we love to hear what stories you've listened to, what stories you hated listening to. Like those two. Tell us how you feel about the show, the content, the voices you hear, where you think we should go next as well. This is a time to do that during this membership campaign. This is where we hear you. Give us a call and make the contribution and tell us what you think. All of that at 800-525-9917. 9917. I have to wrap it up, and I'm so sad. I don't want this conversation, speaking of interviews, I don't want it to end, Jesse Thorne, but I think it's going to have to end. Last words for our audience.
Yeah, I just want to give a shout out to this one dude who used to walk around the mission painted completely red in a bowler hat with a cane. Not just because he had the courage to just walk around painted completely red in a bowler hat and a cane, but because just like I somehow grew up in a world, and it's one that KALW is still standing firmly behind, where it was awesome for just a dude to walk around painted completely red. And everyone was like, hey, there's that guy that paints himself entirely red, rather than, oh, we should shun that guy who paints himself entirely red. So shout out to that dude.
What a way to end the show. Thank you, Jesse, for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a real honor.
All right. Our honor. Thanks. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.